the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, welcome to another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. Like always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. Got a lot to talk about today. Bring in the guys real quick, because I want to, before we get into the sports of it all, and, you know, sports is always fun, it's a good time to talk about. Anybody else planning on getting Tom Brady toasty this weekend, like he did on that boat parade? I mean, I know we were all texting about how maybe not the best time to have a boat parade like that, but we have Alexander Ovechkin in a fountain, and now we have Tom Brady tossing the Lombardi Trophy. And I don't know about you two, I'm about it. I like what I saw in that particular instance. That and watching a 43-year-old man being just escorted out by clearly some handlers because he is so drunk he could not walk if they weren't helping him is just amazing.
No, I plan on remembering my weekend, so I don't plan on getting Tom Brady toasty, and I hope I never get so desensitized to success that, oh, on my seventh trophy, I'm like, eh, screw it. Maybe I'll throw this one into the river. What?
That was excellent. Him tossing that trophy, first of all, I was just like, what the hell? Like, you could lose. Like, is someone jumping in the water to get it? Or do you think they just keep cruising?
Oh, jumps in the water. Yeah, they have divers ready and waiting to go get that. The punter has to go down and get it. That's his punishment if Gronk doesn't grab it.
I would still love to get that toasty because he was like humble drunk. When you have your right hand over your person and then you're just smiling, that's the international sign of someone, please help me walk. And then he got assistance. And then when he fired off the tweet that, sorry, too much like
no, nothing to see here, a little too much avocado tequila. Which
he missed like a D or an H or something.
But I'm sorry, if nothing else came out of this weekend, I found out that you can make an avocado tequila margarita, and this just sounds lovely, and I cannot wait to try it. 100%.
Yes, more people for tequila.
See, Russ can attest, I enjoy tequila. Tequila just enjoys me a little bit more and creates problems.
Yeah, well, we're talking about sports because we like watching entertainment, right? So in the spirit of watching entertainment, I think we like tequila with you, too.
That's fair. Moving over to the sports side of it, the reason Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, and a bunch of other guys celebrating. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 31. Kansas City Chiefs, 9. Before I say anything else about this game, and there's a lot to say about this game, this was a very handicapped game with the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs were missing a decent portion of their offensive line. So right there, you're immediately behind the chains, and it's very hard to make up for that. You could see that by the fact that on almost every single play, Patrick Mahomes was running for his life. Even so, that they're showing highlights of throws he made that nobody caught because they were so insane that he was even able to make them. Add to that now that I would, and if either of you want to argue this, that's fine, but I'm this is my perfect opinion. Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce legitimately just dropped the ball in this game. They could not come up with anything. The both of them, the two go-to guys for these guys, Jay, had no ability to even remotely help Mahomes out. Travis Kelce still finished with 10 catches for 133 yards, but it just felt like he dropped more than he caught. Tyreek Hill, 7 catches, 73 yards. Patrick Mahomes altogether, 26 of 49, 270, and 2 interceptions.
It was rough. My favorite part was CBS, like, they tweeted out a kid who, like, reenacted all of it, and it's just, like, him getting chased crazy and making these acrobatic dives and throws. That's what it was. It was like a sideshow almost. My prop bet for Tariq Hill, 92.5 yards over, that hurt. But, yeah, I mean, Kelce caught more than Tariq, but, like, they weren't going anywhere. The yards after the catch wasn't there. They had no momentum, and it was weird to see. It was very weird. I wanted a high-scoring game, but what are you going to do when you don't have the guys who protect you and kept you upright all year, and they're gone?
Absolutely. And see, that's the thing. Like you said, they didn't have anything after the catch. Usually a team that is built for that big play breakout and let's do this kind of thing did not happen. They could not do anything after the catch. And that's a credit to Tampa Bay's defense. Tampa Bay's defense played great. Everybody acts like this was the Brady show. I mean, Brady was 21 of 29 for 201 and 3 touchdowns. That's good. That's a good game. That's a solid game. But to me, Russ, that just feels more like a just keep us ahead and let the defense do everything else kind of game.
100%. And that's been the formula for Tampa Bay all season long. And they played it to perfection. They let Kansas City absolutely implode in themselves, took away the top from Kansas City, which they live in. Like, Travis Kelce, yeah, 10 for 133. You take away his 33-yard reception, that's 9 for 100. That's a 9-yard average. Nothing for him, right? Tyreek Hill, the same, 7 for 73. Take away his longest, it's 6 for 50. Again, little stuff. They completely took the top on there and let Kansas City just blow their own foot off. 11 penalties. Nice and steady. Tom took them down to 4 touchdowns. 3 of those drives were assisted by Kansas City defensive penalties. Mm-hmm. 2 of them, at least 2 penalties. It's exactly like you said. They let the defense do what they did, and Tom just didn't mess up. And halo number 7.
Oh, and see, the thing for me, I mean, look, this was 31-9, so this play alone didn't affect it. But I could tell it was going to get bad when in the last few minutes of the first half, I want to say the Patriots because we're talking about Tom Brady, but it's the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers on like the 15-yard line, 10-yard line, and Brady knows he can't take a sack. They have no timeouts. They'd never get everybody on the field in time to kick the ball. So Brady throws one out of the bat, and I'm sorry, anyone that wants to debate this, I had someone on Twitter literally tweet me, how can I host a sports show if I really thought Brady was throwing that away? And to which I responded to the guy, because he threw it into the first row of the stands. It wasn't like he put this on Evans. This ball was above Evans. It hit the back of the, it hit the stands. So Evans wasn't coming down with this. And if he did come down with it, he was going to land out of bounds. So Brady put it in a position where if Evans wanted to try and go get it, he could. But in reality, it was a complete pass. They call pass interference on Matthew for it. And I tweeted, I thought, look, it didn't alter the game. I thought it was a weak pass interference. It was like one of those, no one was getting that ball. If you go back and look at it, no one was getting that ball. So really to call pass interference does nothing. But I mean, obviously I'm going to struggle with this.
Maybe next season.
Yeah. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers obviously scored the touchdown to go into the half. So I saw it, and if nothing else, I just enjoyed the trash talk between Brady and Matthew. I mean, look, Brady is 40-something years old. He is not afraid to get in anybody's face and have a couple words with him, and I love it. I think it's so enjoyable to see. But that being said, we talked about this last week because of the odds that went into it. Brady played good, as I said, 21 of 29, 201, 3 touchdowns. But, Russ, was it really Super Bowl MVP worthy performance?
I guess technically, I mean, no, to answer your question straight up, you just look at the stat line and just watch. No, there wasn't anything spectacular that you showed, but it was probably more of the spirit of the team kind of MVP deal where it's not like anyone else really stood out. It was a whole team effort. So, hey, you give it to the leader and you hear all of them talking in the post games and their interviews sense that it was, hey, Tom came in and Tom was coaching and Tom was telling us this is how things are done. So, I mean, I said it before, if the Bucs were going to win, he was going to get the MVP regardless, even if he went, you know, 1 for 30. But no, he didn't have a performance that would really say he has to be the MVP. It was just kind of predestined.
See, I would have loved it if they did like a MVPs and they gave it to everyone on the defensive side of the ball, because that would have been unique, right? But Russ nailed what I was going to say. Go ahead, Russ. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just imagining breaking the trophy up like Mean Girls.
Like Mean Girls, yeah.
A bit of a tiara for you.
This goes to Ndamukong Suh. He did so well tonight.
And for the prettiest smile on the defensive line.
This goes to Jason Pierre-Paul. He's missing 2 freaking fingers.
It would be easier for them to pass around during the parade, but yeah, if if you listen to what Russ said and what the commentators are saying, they were basically saying, like, Brady was calling everybody and texting everybody and keeping the room together. And, like, that's the stuff that you're not going to see in the stat line. And if that's true, if he was that glue where he got people to come and perform, like, Fournette, then fine. It's effing Tom Brady, man. FTB. Every time he does something, it's FTB for me. Because, of course, like, I need to know he files his taxes wrong or something to make me feel better. Because I hate how much shine he gets.
Yeah. Which, by the way, credit to Fournette. 16 carries, 89 yards. Like, that wasn't a dominating performance, but you know what it was? It was enough of a performance to keep that run game believable that Kansas City had to play to it. They couldn't just expect them to go out and throw it all over the yard. They kept that run game very believable, and that helped the offense. A little bit more. We're going to switch over to Stafford because we have a lot of stories coming in about other offers, and I want to see how these guys feel about it. Before I do, two last things, and I know, Jay, how much you're going to hate this, but we are going to stay on Tom Brady for just a few. No, I just want to ask you, during the post game, hoisting the trophy, they tell Tom Brady, you're the MVP, yada, yada. But Jim Nantz asks, like, you know, if this is the final year, is this a great crowning achievement? And Brady straightforward said, oh, no, we'll be back next year. A little, like, do you feel that is more of a in the moment, I'm hyped up, I don't want to, or is that more of, does Tom Brady really think he's going to come back and contend next year?
I mean, I'm the schmuck who says he sucks. If I say that, or if he'll go away, or he's going to regress, or he will start to show signs of, like, because he hasn't, right? Like, he has, but he hasn't. I mean, he'll be back. He's going to be back, and he's going to contend, and I just hope when he leaves, he does it at a great moment. Like, I still hold it that LeBron's going to, like, walk off the court. Like, I'm done. Like, launch a three and be done in dramatic fashion. I want Brady to go out on top, at least. He's this perfect human being. I don't want to see the regression. But he'll be back.
Yeah, we'll get to that one day. But I maintain that LeBron James will retire after his son's rookie year in the NBA. LeBron's going to keep going on one-year deals, and then wherever Bronny gets drafted, he's going to sign a low contract with them so he can be the first father-son to ever play in the NBA together. And then after that year, LeBron will walk off with his however many rings, MVPs, and it'll be like his Washington Wizards. Like Jordan going to the Wizards. That'll be his Washington Wizards year. But he will walk away. I maintain it. But Russ, over to you. In the moment, or is that Brady really already knowing, nope, I'm coming back. This is just one ring. I got another one I gotta run for.
I'd like to say that there was nothing to see here, and it's just a little avocado tequila. but no, he's going to be back. It sucks. Parody's dead. No, he'll be back. This team was – he's not the reason they got there. He enabled them to. He's still good enough to win a Super Bowl as a quarterback, but he wasn't the main reason, so they'll be back. But alternate thought on LeBron, he actually retires for a little bit to get away from J.R. Smith and having to, you know, question every shot that guy takes, and then just unretires when Bronny gets drafted.
Now, see, I think he's going to make Bronny, like, that's what he's going to do. He's going to work out a deal where you guys can draft my son, and then we're going to trade my son in a first-round pick for J.R. Smith, and I'll replace J.R. Smith on the roster. look, 21 to 29, 201, and 3 touchdowns. That proves he's good enough to keep a team in a game. Like, I'm not saying that's winning the game, but look, he's not going anywhere. Was he the reason they got there? No, there's a multitude of reasons, but he brought the winning attitude and the preparation that team needed to take that next step. He put in these guys' minds that if you think you can do it, you can do it. This can't be a we might do it. This is a we are going to do it. I mean, you guys both mentioned it, but the players were talking about in post-game press conferences about how the night before, Tom Brady is texting them saying, we're going to win tomorrow. Like, we're going to win tomorrow. It wasn't a let's play good tomorrow, let's all, you know, be a team. It's we're going to win tomorrow. So I love that.
Does Tom Brady need to be a future coach? I mean, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like a coach. And if a coach can inspire that, wouldn't you want that?
I've said for years that I personally do. And that's the thing. A lot of people think that this other guy is going to go into the booth as an announcer. I've said for years that I think that the next great matchup we're going to see is we're going to see Peyton Manning and Tom Brady both coaching. I think we're going to see both these guys on the sideline with the headset on coaching, and that's going to be the big deal now. The two former greats going, you know, against each other, Peyton coaching wherever, Tom Brady coaching wherever. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to see. But I also at the same time think that Brady could be that guy who, once he hangs up the cleats, you just don't see him in any football capacity other than like a Jeter capacity, that he might one day be a minority owner of the Patriots or of the 49ers. He grew up in San Francisco Bay Area. So I see him as he's either going to do that or, yeah, Brady's going to get that. The only way Brady's going to be able to scratch the itch is by getting on a sideline and coaching, whether that's college or NFL. And you know someone will give him a job. That's not hard to figure out.
I can totally see Brady being like a cross between Derek Jeter and Bill Murray, where he just disappears for the most part, except for like a random cologne commercial. But then he also just shows up in the middle of nowhere and takes a biscuit off of your dinner plate and just goes, ha ha, no one will ever believe you. And he walks off into the sunset and shines his seven rings at people.
By the way, if neither of you guys, this is way down the line of what we're talking about, but if neither of you guys saw it, there are no celebrities at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am this year. It's just the pros. Usually it's the amateurs and celebrities. Well, Bill Murray, Macklemore, which, by the way, if you can watch it just for Macklemore's outfit, which is phenomenal. But Bill Murray, Macklemore, Larry Fitzgerald, Alfonso Ribeiro from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and then two girls. One, yeah, he did that at the end after he made the last putt.
Of course he did.
But,
one move.
And then two girls, one is an actress, and then the other one it was a Miss America. I don't remember their names off the top of my head, so that's why. But both the girls were great golfers, very good golfers. But they all played in a little five-hole charity event. And just watching Bill Murray, because Jim Nance was hosting it and driving with them, and just watching how Bill Murray will just pick on Jim Nance relentlessly makes it that entertaining, just that entertaining. So if you haven't got watching that just for the Bill Murray aspect of it is great. Last question before, and the reason I asked this question, and Lord knows that Jillian's boy toy is going to give me a text on this too, but these are two of the most shrewd individuals when it comes to Hall of Fames and like giving people their due credit after it's said and done. So but I want to ask you both. I'm not going to ask. I'm going to make a statement and let you two attack it. Whoever wants to go first, just put your hand up real fast. Number 12 needs to be retired league-wide as soon as Tom Brady's done.
Oh, no. Oh, fuck that. No.
Hey, I hate league-wide retirement. With the one caveat of, like, Jackie Robinson, right? Because that's the color barrier. And that was an important thing.
And I give you
culturally.
That. Then why the hell is 99?
I don't think it should be.
Okay.
I don't think 99 should be out of circulation. If 99 is out of circulation, why is 9 still there? Right?
Exactly.
Like, Maurice Richard, like, who else? Arn Ross, like, who else has not been as good as Gretzky? Like, where is that line? Doesn't make any sense to me why it's retired league-wide, other than old people, Brian Burke, Lou Lamoriello types, looked at it and went, I hate high numbers. This is an excuse to let fewer high numbers in the rotation. But it's dumb. I think people should wear 66 too. You grew up idolizing Mario? Screw you, Pittsburgh fans. Don't say, hey, that number's off limits. No, that's you want to honor him. And yes, I'm talking directly to Josh Hosang. But that's an honor thing. It shouldn't be forbidden like that. It's asinine to me.
I get like teams retiring numbers as an homage to the players, like 19 and 5,
yeah,
and all. I get that.
Different.
But this is the reason I'm saying this. The man has 7 titles. He has, by the time his career is over, everything Drew Brees just spent the last 2 years attaining, Tom Brady's going to take away. Tom Brady's going to take the record. So when he hangs it all up, Tom Brady will have all the passing records. He'll have it all. And that's the thing. How much, like, and it almost twists over to the, you know, to the Wayne Gretzky conversation, because Wayne Gretzky has more assists than the next person has points, or yada, yada, yada. And that brings to that point. How much more does someone have to do? Like, you're never going to see it again. We're never going to see one guy attain 7 Super Bowls, break all these records. It's just not going to happen. And you know why? Because in our parents' lifetimes, it took 2 franchises that long to get those. And one of them was the freaking steel curtain. So there's a reason behind it. Seven Super Bowls. The guy has more Super Bowls than either the Steelers or, now granted, he got the Patriots those six Super Bowls, but still, the guy has more Super Bowls by himself. He's the only person to ever win a Super Bowl in both divisions. How much more do you have to do, Jay?
But you're also implying that is the reward, and I don't think retiring a number is a reward. I think there's got to be more than just, I did a bunch of shit, now don't let anyone else wear my number. I understand that is something that people do in leagues, but, like, I don't want to, like, eventually you're just going to run out of numbers. People are going to have, like, emojis on the back of their jerseys, and, oh, there goes poop emoji, get another touchdown. Like,
but before
poop emoji punches it in for two.
Or they could just go back to the days of Ty Cobb when nobody had numbers. Like, just go back to putting your name on the back of a jersey. But I'm out
on retiring.
I understand what you're saying. And I don't even see it as a reward. I just see it as, look, this person did something that's so great, it altered the landscape of, like Russ says for the Hall of Fame, if you can explain the story of the last 20 years without that person's name coming up, they don't need to be in the Hall of Fame. And I agree. I really agree. But in this case, the last 20 years, you can't, I mean, granted, because of all the Super Bowls, take away those, you can't get from 1999 to 2019, 2020 without Peyton Manning and Tom Brady's name coming up multiple times for the changes they made in this game. Brady also managed to collect half the Super Bowls in that time. So it's just that thing of, there's not much else you can do. We're never going to see another Wayne Gretzky. Now, I agree with Russ wholeheartedly. You're never going to see another Gordie Howe either. So 9 should be, if you're going to do it for 99, you need to do it for 9. Especially since that's big. But I'm just saying, Brady is that. Brady, you're never going to see another Tom Brady. You could live to be 99 years old, Jay. There's never going to be another guy that's going to do what this guy did. So 12.
I can't live to 99 because we're retiring 99. I probably can't be that either.
Okay.
Probably have to die.
You can move
from
right
98 into, to 100.
Mm-hmm. You can move right into 100. I'm just saying.
You're making a fair point. It's just a difference of opinion. I'd rather have less of more things. I'd rather not have all you did that, you did that. Yeah, we probably won't see a number 99 or a number 12, but maybe 100 years from now we will.
That's fair.
Things go into perpetuity, which is scary.
It's a matter of opinion, I do, but I just think for what we saw something that will never be repeated, and it's kind of that moment of if retiring a jersey is the highest honor we can give someone, how much more do you have to do to get that? And I agree with Russ. The Jackie Robinson thing is in and of its own. That guy did something that legitimately change the culture of not baseball, the culture of sports. So I get that. I 100% get that. I'm with you guys that I never really understood the Wayne Gretzky thing. I get how good he was. But that's what I'm saying, though. If Wayne Gretzky's that good, you can't imagine that Jordan 23 and Brady 12 is that far behind in what they did statistically, but also what they did for the game. Those are three guys that effectively changed the landscapes of their sports. Head to toe, no questions, no way to change it.
Well, they absolutely made a huge impact, and you can tell by, well, how many players in the NBA wear 23 because of Jordan? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a direct sign that, hey, that's the influence that he had. How many wear 24 or 8 because of Kobe still mm-hmm. and say that? You know, and that's a lot closer in age. And I think you're missing out on that chance where, like, the next superstar wears 12. Like, why 12? Like, because Tom Brady... Because Tom Brady, right? Like, you missed that. And instead, it's just a number on the wall.
You were looking at someone who has never... I wore 9 in our hockey league because someone else on our team had 12. I wore 12 from beginning to end. That's been my number my entire life, at least since, like, 2000 when Tom Brady came along. So I get that. I get that side of it, too. 12 is... you're missing out that opportunity, yes. For some kid who was just born 5-6 years ago and is going to be in the league one day, who admires Tom Brady beyond belief, for them to have a chance to say, I want to wear 12. I understand that, and I get that. It's just that thing of, it seems to me the ultimate final, you know, I can't even think of a bigger word. The ultimate final, like, accomplishment, the ultimate final recognition of what he did. So I understand it. I really do.
We retired your number. You may die now.
Pretty much. He keeps drinking like that. He's probably going to fucking die. Good God.
Rename the Super Bowl MVP trophy after him.
Does it even have a name right now? Yeah, I mean, that's fine.
Like
they did with the Bill Russell Award for the NBA. I agree. I love it. I don't know. Yeah, that'd be great. You're the winner of the 2027 Tom Brady Award.
Brady Memorial Reward. May you rest in peace. Nothing to see here. Just a little avocado tequila.
He drowned trying to grab the 2023 trophy out of the lake.
Exactly.
All right, moving on. We are going to, like I said, we took the deal for Stafford with the Rams. I like it. I don't really see any other deal on the table. But over the last couple weeks, deals have been slow. Which, by the way, I don't know if either of you guys saw this data. Did you guys see the Stafford comment that I had a lot of injuries during my time that I didn't disclose because the people of Detroit were going through a tougher time? Boo fucking him.
You sat
on a lovely little house on a lake, getting paid quite a bit of money to deal with your fractured toe. Get over it. Like,
biggest pool in Michigan, baby.
Exactly. So, but over the last couple weeks, the deals have come out, and I only have two of them because these are the only two that I think would even have made the consideration. But to me, neither of them are even that considerable. I'll get the first one out of the way, and if you guys have other ones, chime in. Washington football team offered the 19th overall pick and a third rounder. That's not getting it done. There's nothing in that deal that's getting you there. The second one, and Jay, I know you were a proponent of this one, so I'm going to let you go first after I read this. The Carolina Panthers offered the 8th pick, a 5th round pick, and Teddy Bridgewater.
I mean, first, real quick on Washington, we could do that by trading down and get a better return. So absolutely. Thanks for coming, Washington. For Teddy, I mean, show me a flashy new toy, and I'm going to be the first person to jump up and grab it. I love the prospect of Teddy Bridgewater playing for us. But when you put things into the grand scheme of what we're trying to do, I'd rather have the first-round picks. I mean, I'd rather have what we obviously got for Goff. Would I love to see Teddy Bridgewater as our quarterback? Hell yeah. But, you know, it's more of a longer process. I'm learning to be a little more mature and let things grow and marinate a little bit. Teddy's the flashy toy. I'd rather have the pick. So, in Washington, that was a fucking joke, so... Yeah, that's where I'm at with those. And those are the only two that I saw as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen like other little things. I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but a lot of just things you're not really going to sensibly jump on. Like at the end of the day, you're not going to get rid of Stafford knowing you're going to pass on that pick and knowing that you know, that first round pick is, or those multiple first round picks, kind of is what sealed the deal. Goff is great. It's fantastic to have Russ, but at the end of the day, if you're in a rebuild like that, those picks are what it was all about, and LA just shelled out more than enough.
Yeah, I struggle with it because it really comes down to, hey, you can ask the Goff or Teddy question, and for whatever you think of their talent, I think they're similar, right? Teddy 2 years older, but it's an easier contract to swallow for rebuild teams. But it comes down to, would you rather have one really good shot at the target or 2 to 3 not as good but still above average shots at the target? And that's what the Rams deal was, right? Number 8 from the Panthers, hey, there's a really good chance you're going to get a really good player. And with any other front office we've ever had with the Lions, I'd rather that one because it's harder to mess that pick up. But with Holmes, who's supposed to be a great talent evaluator, the Rams pick makes more sense because now you get 3 kicks at the cans, a 2 firsts and a 3rd, in the top 90 at doing what he does best, and that's farming out gems later in the draft. You just need one of those picks to perform like a top 10 pick was, and it's an overwhelming win. You look at the draft value chart, even if you discount those future picks 75% because they're in the future, it's still a higher value for the Rams. So, yeah, it would have been a lot flashier to take the Panthers one, the Rams trade's probably smarter, more level-headed one.
Well, and I, for me, look, that eighth pick, that's great. It means you have back-to-back picks. It means the seventh and the eighth, you're back-to-back picks. So I think the value to for maybe a team to try to come up and get one of those becomes a little bit, you know, becomes a little bit easier to handle. It's not gonna guarantee you three other first-round picks. You're not, or two other first-round picks and all in later drafts, I don't think. But on the other side, it is that it's legitimately okay. We can go into this if you take that trade with Carolina. We can go into this, and with back-to-back, we can get the two best players available back-to-back. You literally are saying, like, we can go quarterback, linebacker. We can go wide receiver, defensive lineman back-to-back and get the two best, and we also know the phone's going to be ringing about one of those picks, which is great. So I like it for that, but at the same time, I agree with you. If you're telling me I've got one chance to make a 20-foot putt, or three chances to sink a 50-foot putt, give me the three chances, because after the first one, I'm going to at least have a good idea of where that ball's going. You know, that first one, you're just playing on instinct. So I agree with you. Give me the three shots, and I like the better chance of those odds.
And this is weird for me, because usually I pull it all together and give me one top-line asset. But the NFL draft, one of the only drafts where the drop-off from 10 to 30 isn't as big as the other ones. Mm-mm. But I want to ask you guys, is this the coward's way of thinking it? If you trade for one premium asset for Stafford, is that guy just tied to his entire career? That's the guy we got for Stafford. If he's a bust, even a little bit, he's going to get buried by it. Whereas if it's two first-round picks, it gets spread out. Am I being a coward thinking that way?
Are you talking about the player we got or the pick?
The player.
The player.
The player. See, yeah, like, yeah, say it's whoever they end up taking there. Say it's Micah Parsons, right?
Okay.
Is then his rookie season, everyone going, he missed a tackle. That's the bum we got for Stafford?
I see what you're saying. I don't think so, but I will also say I think because we went in that trade, we got a player of the same position coming back this way. I think for how long he's here, whether it's the 2 years, whether Goff somehow turns it around and we go, oh, hey, what do you know? Goff can play in this league, extension, whether however you see it. I think no matter what happens for the next 2 years, Jared Goff's name, but vice versa here, Matt Stafford's name, does not get mentioned without the other. It's going to be Jared Goff, 27 of, you know, 45 for 260 and three touchdowns. Well, Matt Stafford went 27 of 30 for 260 and three touchdowns. Those two are going to be linked for as long as Jared Goff is in this town. The pick, I don't think as much. I really don't, because we've had too many cases of guys going out the door for something and what we draft in return, and I just don't see it. Unless it's a quarterback. Unless it's Zach Wilson, unless it's Justin Fields, which, by the way, can we just talk about how Justin Fields is just falling in everybody? Justin Fields isn't even like the third best quarterback on some people's draft boards right now. If it's a quarterback,
I'll catch him.
I'm sure you will. Justin Fields, or not Justin, whoever we take, if it's a quarterback, they are about the only one I could see that would legitimately be. So this is the guy. This is the heir apparent to Stafford. Goff is a placeholder. This is the heir apparent. Yes, the first couple years, if that person isn't, we got to understand though. Stafford was out two of the first 3 years with injuries. Stafford looked like a China doll early on. But yeah, if Stafford isn't saving us on, if this person isn't handling fourth quarter drives, if this person isn't able to make those big plays late in games that keep us in it, yes, I can see some Detroit fans kind of going, really, this is the guy that they were like, we need to have on our team, and so much so we parted ways with Stafford. Anyone else? No. A defensive lineman, a linebacker, those people aren't going to lock up the same. It's going to be more of like, is it same old defensive lineman, or has someone finally turned a corner here?
I hope so. All I keep hearing is, hey, remember Eric Ebron, where we could have drafted Aaron Donald or Odell Beckham, and they're a different position, and we're crazy Lions fans.
I'm sorry, looking at it now, don't get me wrong, Ebron was a terrible decision. I'm never going to justify it. But looking at it now, you can't just look at the Giants flash. You got to look at everything across the board. Can either of you say that Odell Beckham was an overall good investment? That guy is crashed and burned since he got to Cleveland. So much so that Cleveland is talking about releasing him. Not to take JJ, I want your answer on Russ's question, but that guy is, I mean, he's technically a talent, I get that, but he was on bad Cleveland teams, and he wasn't even the third best receiver on those teams some year.
Yeah, OBJ, I don't know. He brings a lot of drama, which everyone knows about with him. I think he can still be what he was for New York before they shipped him out. I don't know. I follow him on Instagram, and I watch his workout routine, and he's rebuilding that leg. Looks like a stud. I'd still put him on the team. But I haven't seen any pizza. He's looking lean. He's looking real lean. To go back to Russ's question, though, I think you're both saying something that can exist. I think the next quarterback will always be compared to Stafford, but I also think that it's not a coward approach to spread out this is for that. Because, like, look at Verlander. When Verlander got traded, he got traded for three pieces. And on the surface, you're not going to compare all three of them to Verlander. It was a divergence of what he was to what you got. So I think getting rid of Stafford and getting multiple picks, the only time you're going to compare Stafford is whoever the quarterback is after Goff. And I'd rather not be a one-for-one, because then if it's Bridgewater and – because those picks don't mean anything to me, but if it's Bridgewater for Stafford, you're the dude who replaced the dude. That's the thing you kind of get to avoid getting first-round picks.
No, I completely agree. Going back, Jay, I will say the one reason I think that I'm switching way back to a different topic, but I will say the one reason I think OBJ still gets that credit is because OBJ got what a lot of these like young talent get when you see someone make the big catch. I'm talking about the big, reaching back out of nowhere catch. Everybody, but then you see all of his warm up routines where he's walking around catching it with one hand and all that. It's like, that's great. That means nothing when you drop six passes because you tried to do that in a game and some dude knocked it away. So I think OBJ gets that credit for the talent he could have, but it's like, well, that potential talent's great. It means nothing to us if you're not actually using that talent in the game. That's how I feel about it.
Tell us how you really feel about OBJ.
I have no real opinion, other than I just think that everybody talks about, look at the two guys we could have had, but we took Eric Ebron. One of those guys is a Hall of Famer right now if he hung up the shoes, doesn't have to worry about it. The other one had some really good years on Giants team and then went to Cleveland and really kind of hurt his career because he just has not lived up to the hype and lived up to everything. Now, he could go somewhere or rehab and get back into it, and I could be wrong. 5 years from now, we could be talking about an OBJ as one of the best receivers of the last decade. I don't personally think that's going to happen. But what do I know? So the Ebron is still the worst of the three, but I'm just saying one of those guys is proving to be a real shameful miss by us. The other one might have had a couple hot years, which would have been par with the Lions. Come have a couple really good years here, and then you leave town for better pastures, or you leave town because you had a couple good years, and then you declined very quickly. That's how I feel.
And the Giants did get a first, a second, and Jabril Peppers for him.
Yeah.
So, hey, 5 years of Odell and then cash out for that? That's selling high.
Well, and they sold right before it dropped big. So, yeah, I that's absolutely a great thing. Before we get into it, because we want to talk, Pistons made a big trade. I know these guys both love it. They both love the mad scientist that is Troy Weaver making moves on a dime. Before we do that, I want to ask you guys real quick. Last week, Hall of Fame class announced. Pretty, I would say, a fairly good class. Peyton Manning, Charles Woodson, Calvin Johnson, Drew Pearson, Alan Faneca, John Lynch, and then to a coach down the road, Tom Flores, who also played in the league, and then Bill Nunn. We could wade through this if we really wanted to. I don't really see the point. John Lynch, great safety, won a Super Bowl. Alan Faneca, great offensive lineman. You'll see I'm chipping away to just three names here. Charles Woodson, obviously for us and I, little place in our heart, Heisman Trophy winner in Michigan, one of the best corners of the last 20 years, so really happy for him. Peyton Manning, I don't think anyone thought that Peyton Manning wasn't going to go into this Hall of Fame class. You just can't be what you are. But that being said, the last one is Calvin Johnson. Now, we grew up watching Calvin, so I want to ask you guys, because, yes, we watched all these great Red Wings, and we saw this, but this is really that first one that we can honestly all say we fully remember coast-to-coast in their career. So I want to ask you guys, Jay, when you see this, and you see Calvin Johnson's going into the Hall of Fame, we all, I'm sure we all agree it's warranted, but does, I mentioned this to Aaron the other night, does it just feel different? Like, I feel like when you say Yzerman, you say Lindstrom, we hold them on such a high pedestal because we only knew them for greatness, but Calvin, we saw all the way across the board, and we remember all the low times, too, of the bad breakup here and the fact that he wants nothing to do with the Ford family. I mean, that's changing now, but just a little bit different now when you get to see a guy you remember coast to coast heading into the Hall of Fame?
Different only in the sense that it goes for me that my first thought was, oh, great, he's going to the Hall and we still didn't win a playoff game. Those two things are married together for me. It's not so much the breakup and how he's fixing it now, which is great. It's more so, hey, look at what we had and what we didn't do with it. It's the opportunity cost for me.
I understand.
Yeah, it's a painful way to look at it, but yeah, it is always a sad reminder that, like, look how good he is. And more than anything, though, it makes me feel old. Like, I remember the day he was drafted. Yeah. You know who else remembers it? Not to bring him, invoke his name again, but Tom Brady was drafted after Calvin Johnson and won a Super Bowl after Calvin Johnson got put in the Hall of Fame. That's how long of a career we're talking.
That's messed up.
That's messed up. But no, I think we would hold his name. I kind of, back to Eric's point about, you know, Yzerman and Lidstrom and the reverence around their name. To Justin's point, if we had done anything with it, if the Lions had won a couple playoff games, you know, let alone a Super Bowl, I think that there would be a spike in people named Calvin all across Michigan. We'll say it that way, the kind of reverence and renown you would have. But it sucks because some of that luster gets worn off from the ineptitude of the entire organization and leaves nothing but pain for us. But we're used to it.
Well, I mean, for me, I agree. The win, but I also think that it says so much about exactly how good he really was. This guy was the best receiver in the league from the day he came into the league to the day he left the league, and he was on one of the worst teams from beginning to end. And that's the thing. You look back and watch, like, I went back. Aaron's like, they were showing his highlights, and then she goes, was he really that good? And I'm like, I want to show you something. And I flipped to a game where the announcer before, it was almost like a Tony Romo moment. The announcer goes, oh, look, they have three people on Calvin Johnson. Matt Stafford would never think to throw the ball there. You want to know what it was? It was a 40-yard touchdown by Calvin Johnson because two of the guys couldn't handle him off the line, and the third guy wasn't fast enough to stay with him. And I said, that's how good he was. You could have put all 11 on him. The Lions were probably going to get sacked, but you know, they couldn't have stopped Calvin. It was that it's watching that. It's like watching Barry in wide receiver form. You just couldn't stop him. And that's the other thing that hurts it is these are two Hall of Famers, two best of their positions. Their stories in Detroit just mirror each other so perfectly. No help around them, had to do it themselves. And oh, by the way, when they left, they didn't leave on high notes. If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure Barry faxed his retirement to the Lions.
Oh, yeah.
So it's that thing of these are two of the most revered guys in the league for the rest of time. When you have that we've had the conversation a million times. When you say who's the best running back of all time, you don't usually get past three before Barry Sanders' name is brought up. I would make the argument that for our lifetime, it's going to be who are the best receivers of all time. It'd be very hard to get past three without Calvin Johnson's name being brought up. I mean, Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson, and I don't know, and those are three names you can kind of rotate around if you really wanted to. So it's just, it's so tough when you see this because it's the ultimate honor and it's amazing, and I'm glad to hear that he's making his way back to Detroit in some ways, and that's great, but it's just, like you both said, it's so tough to know the guy's had a amazing career and he has nothing really to show for it. Other than he'll have the single season receiving record for a while. Like, that's it. That's all we can hand to you, man. Like, we didn't get you a title. We didn't get you even an NFC division title would have been at least something to put on there, but we can't do that for him. So it is tough. It is very, very tough to see. And unfortunately, for the longest time, like, it's not going to happen, obviously. For the longest time, I thought we were going for round three with Stafford of guy that's going to get into the Hall of Fame just off the immaculate numbers, never going to win a playoff game, and he's going to leave Detroit the wrong way. And for however you want to look at it, whether this is the wrong way or not, to this day, he still won't say if he asked to be traded, or because he likes to say it was a mutual thing. I think it's more of Sheila Ford said, hey, listen, whoever comes in here is going to want to tear this down to the studs. Are you okay with that, or do you want to get out of here? And I'm willing to bet Stafford looked at it and said, yep, get me out of here. I can't do that. So,
well, Stafford tried to sell his house like 8 months ago, so. There's no way that he was like, yeah, I'm not going to Carolina, get rid of the Teddy Bridgewater trade and take the Goff. I'm going to L.A. I can't tell you that he didn't say that. Like, he probably was involved in that.
I wouldn't be astonished. I'm sure he had a lot more control on what happened there. But that's the thing. It might have been that. Midway through the season or the start of the season last year, he may have said, I trade me. And they probably looked at him and said, look, more than likely it's going to be a whole new change next year. We can't trade you midseason. We're not going to be able to pull that off. Let's get through this year, and we'll see what happens. And, I mean, to his credit, he gave it an effort. I mean, Russ, I think you and I were saying, like, this is one of the, like, better, like, yardage years he's had in the last couple of years. So he gave it his best all, and that, like, but like you said, Jay, that might have been to kind of boost the numbers so that he looks even better on a trade sheet, you know, as opposed to if he has a semi-decent year, and then maybe you only get one extra first-round pick instead of the two.
Right. So. Or playing the last game in the season when it doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, I'll never get that. That just never does not make sense to me.
Makes more sense if he knew he was leaving.
Absolutely. Moving on. Detroit Pistons made a trade the other day, trading Derrick Rose to a team he's already been on, the New York Knicks. In return, Pistons get a 2021 second round pick via the Charlotte Hornets. So I don't know, what did Charlotte get in all this is what I'm trying to figure out.
The Knicks already
had their pick. Okay, gotcha. And we pick up guard Dennis Smith Jr., who this is the point I wanted to make. One, Russ, thoughts on the, you know, the overall getting the pick. Derrick Rose is off the books and all that. But when you're looking at Troy Weaver, the fact that you traded a piece that was kind of, you know, a mentor on this team to some young guys and was still playing at a decently high level, effective. I know we've all said he's one bad turn away from another messed up knee. I get that. But trading it for a player who couldn't even crack the Knicks roster as he was on the G League at the time?
I mean, yes, that's a bit of a concern. But they have a lot of bodies at guard, which is weird that, hey, they brought in Derrick Rose, too, to just keep that many heavy number of bodies and push their first-round pick further down the rotation for some reason. It is a little bit of a concern that you're looking and going, hey, the Knicks are barely a 500, and we're going to take up a guy who requested to go down to the G League so he could play on that team. But at the same time, I think when we talked about the Rose trade earlier in the year, we were thinking, hey, a late first from a contending team. That's the target, right? You take a second-round pick that's probably in the top 40, right? So in that first, like, 10 picks in the second round, and you take a flyer on a former lottery pick who's 23. That together is probably about a first-round pick, a late first-round pick from a playoff contender. So I'm okay with the return. He's above average defensively. Three-point shooting's kind of dropped off recently, but it's Josh Jackson again, right, where you're taking a chance on a guy who had some promise in the draft and is still young enough to maybe actualize some of it. So it's not exciting, but bring on the assets, bring on the tank, baby. Here we go.
Yeah. Jay, does it bring any more confidence in that the first thing the guy did when he got to Detroit was sit in his hotel room with his girlfriend and watch the Bad Boys documentary for the 10th time?
I mean, I appreciate the love for sure. It bodes well. It bodes better than his minutes per game. Yeah, ever since he's been on four different teams. He was on Dallas twice, and his average per game has gone down every single year. So I love that he loves some Bad Boys. I love them too now, but I don't know what to expect out of it. Getting rid of Rose, I'd rather have a younger asset who hasn't proven himself than Derrick Rose's knee. So just for that alone, I'm fine with it.
Okay, that's fair. I completely understand. See, that's the thing. In this particular case, and I understand, in Weaver we trust right now. That's how we're kind of operating on this. I understand it's his way of basically saying, like, look, no one's really safe right now. We're going to keep throwing pieces out and putting new pieces in until we find, you know, we find the pieces that start building the puzzle the way we want it. So I like it for that, because I think if you looked at this team, you would say, from the outside looking in, Rose, Blake, probably just because of, you know, what they have invested in him draft-wise, probably Sekou. Those are the pieces you don't really think are going to go anywhere. Everyone else is probably expendable. Those are probably the three that we want to keep, because Blake and Rose have NBA experience. Sekou's a guy that they see a lot of upside in. Everybody else we're going to mix and match. So to take Rose out of the equation kind of does say everybody is expendable. Would I have liked it to have been Blake Griffin that got off the books and not Derrick Rose? Yeah, maybe, but that's for another time. But I agree with it. The only thing that bothers me about it, and I hope Dennis Smith plays well, a second-round pick, to me, is just, it doesn't hold a lot of weight. To me, it's like saying, oh, good, we got a fifth-round pick in the NFL. It's far enough down where you're, like, to go back to it, you're throwing a dart at a board and hoping you maybe hit a big number. That's really what it feels like to me. So it's draft capital. Can't take it away. It's draft capital, and it's something they could use for a later trade. You never know. But I don't like it for that. Look, this is a six-win basketball team. The only upside to defend it is that they've been in a lot of games. Almost every game they've at least been in. They're not getting blown out by anyone. They've beaten some teams that have, you know, they beat the Nets the other night, which, take that for what it is. Kevin Durant didn't play, but I've also pointed out multiple times, this is the worst freaking defense. It's no defense for the Nets. Right now, if the season ended, they would end with the best offense ever. They'd end with the worst defense ever. So this is a team that is there to run you out of the gym. That's all they want to do. And if they can't run you out of the gym, they're going to lose. So that does not bode well for when they get to the playoffs, because a lot of these teams are going to play defense and they're going to make it very tough on them. They beat the Lakers, no Anthony Davis. So again, they're winning games, and at the end of the day, a win's a win. I don't really care, but it's not like they're winning against the primary, like the best of the best. But look, at the end of the day, wins are wins. It's just nice to see that. Who knows what tomorrow's going to bring? We could see Blake Griffin getting traded to Utah for something, for all we know. And it's yeah, I know Russ loves it. And that was going to be my next question: is Blake the next piece that they have to unload? However, so whatever and. In whatever way, Blake has to be the next piece off the books, right? Let me rephrase that. Unless someone's calling about Jeremy Grant and it's real deal for what he's doing.
I think Blake's the first one that you're asking constantly. You call up GM and you're just like, hey, how you doing? Have you watched Blake? No? Good. Would you like to make a trade? I don't think he's going to be the next one shipped out. I think that's going to be Ellington, because, hey, shooters always play and always get moved. But no, that'd be priority 1A.
Yeah, no, it's got to be that, like, if you look at it, like, as a stock in the stock market and they have the graph, this has to be the bottom, right? Like, getting rid of Rose was just turning the corner, and Griffin's got to be there, and if you get something for Ellington or Grant, then that has to be the uptick. We have to be at that bottom where we've acquired enough young and capital and got money off of books to go up. So I'm ready for the up. Okay. I'm also very impatient, so that's just me being weird.
All you guys mentioned are the names that absolutely have to be in next. But it's a weird question of it's do you keep what's working? Because, like, right now Grant is playing great basketball. He really is. So it's like, but in Weaver's plan of all that, does that mean anything? Like you said, the best player on the worst team, is he really one of the best players? It just means you outshine, like, you're the brightest piece of turd in the turd bowl. So it's a little bit more of that. So at the same time, yes, I love it, but it makes me wonder how much that really means to Weaver, that Grant's out there averaging 25 points a game. I feel like to him, all that means is you're just a little more valuable when I trade you. I can ask for a little more than I would have been able to if you were averaging 16 points a game. So
I think that's part of it, but it's also, like you mentioned, in Weaver we trust. Part of the reason is because of what Grant's doing. and he gets to trot him out and go, trust me, look what I did. Mm-hmm. Everyone laughed at me. Look how good he's playing.
Yeah.
So, the Pistons are doing okay because they're losing, but they're competitive. You get rid of Grant, and we lose the competitive part entirely.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So staying in the NBA, All-Star Weekend apparently is going to happen. Why, we don't know. We'll get to that at a, you know, we'll try to understand a later date. Players don't sound like they're really interested in it. One, for both of you, is this something that even needs to happen? Like, I feel like All-Star Weekend can get passed on this year, and it wouldn't make a big difference to anyone. But two, a little more alarming that, honestly, last year, or early, yeah, I guess technically last year, the NBA was the model for bubble. Like, that's what you wanted. They looked like they were doing it perfect. And the NBA just seems to be like, okay, we did good. We can take a break. Because now they're talking about players can travel. They can go to the down to, like, the Virgin Islands and the Caribbean, and they can do whatever they want on their little week-long break. But not only that, I told you guys before the show, the NBA has come out and said, we would have let guys go over to Europe and go home if they wanted to, but our biggest fear is they won't be able to clear, like, the restrictions in time. So your first instinct isn't to worry about the fear of bringing COVID back over or doing something and affecting a family. Your biggest fear is that Giannis isn't going to be able to get out of Greece in time. That's your biggest fear. And to me, that is the way down the line of biggest fears. Yeah, it's going to suck if Giannis can't play. Ooh, yeah, that's terrible, especially if you're Milwaukee contending for a playoff spot. But how about the fact of you could potentially have Giannis bringing COVID and just destroying the entire Milwaukee Bucks team? So, I mean, I laid it out there. There's plenty to talk about, but I guess first, and make it a simple question, Russ, does All-Star Weekend even need to happen?
No. All-Star Weekend exists for two reasons. Kids, sponsors. That's it. If it wasn't for the money and it wasn't for the kids trying to get into the game more, we wouldn't even have the All-Star game to begin with. So do something where you can get ad revenue and kids will be interested in. The Pro Bowl just did it, right? Do something like that. Throw something up on Twitch. I don't care. Have them, two players, Skype from their own homes and play horse against each other. Cool. Slap a big State Farm ad on everything. This is dumb. This is putting money above logic. This is putting dollars above cents. And it's the bottom line. Is why they're thinking they don't care. To your point, they don't care that hey, you might go and the player might get COVID. It might spread COVID. It might hurt everybody. They care that they might not be back in time, and that's going to hurt our ratings, and that's going to hurt the dollars. Never mind that it can be both. It's dumb. I don't get how we went from them being the model to thinking an All-Star game is okay. And I love that LeBron called them out for it.
Well, GM Justin, you're literally wearing two brands on your shirt right now. So I'm going to let you, but Russ brings up a good point. All-Star Weekend exists for those two reasons, to get the young kids into, you can watch the three-point contest, you can watch the dunk contest, all this and that. And the other thing, Kia and all these big sponsors want their name mentioned as many times as possible. But I hate to break it to you, if Blake Griffin jumping over a Kia doesn't sell you your cars, nothing's going to. So it is what it is. But Jay, you are the GM, you are the, you know, you're the guy we put to this. Should All-Star Week happen?
Just straightening my tie real quick for this press conference. It shouldn't, and Russ has it correct. I say that a lot. That should be on a t-shirt. Russ is right.
Please? I do enjoy it.
The league could make more money and still be able to sell stuff and appease kids. They just need a TV show called Balls to the Four Walls, and it's just the Ball family stuck in a house because can't go anywhere because of COVID. Balls to the Walls. Like, sell me a stupid show. Give me a NBA official podcast with ad revenue. Do what the NHL did. Sell your conferences out. Find a better way to sell your shit. And it makes no sense. And when you talk on these other sports leagues and what's happening, I've got parades happening in Tampa. I've got the NBA doing an All-Star game. I've got the NHL and making new rules as we go to make it better for the players and the health of the coaches and the players and whatnot. There's no rhyme or reason to anything. It makes no sense to me why they even need to have an NBA All-Star game in the midst of everything that's happening. Like, no one is really moving in the right direction, it feels like. So I'd rather have a reality show called Balls in These Four Walls and watch the Ball family go nuts. I'd watch it every day, and they'd make all kinds of money over it. But no, we're going to let people have a stupid, pointless All-Star game. So I'm the GM. You're all fired. Get the hell out of my building.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but players have mentioned they have no interest in doing this. You have guys like LeBron and Giannis and all these guys who they just want to sit in their house for a week and not have to travel and deal with these restrictions and deal with getting tested every day. So it's like they have no interest in it. And there's two things to that. One, the last thing you need is these players. I'm sure we all know the movie Mystery Alaska, where the Rangers didn't want to go to Alaska on their week off. That's kind of what you could be running into, where these guys don't want to do this, and they fight back and say, we're not going. I'm not going to where I don't know. I don't remember off top hand where the All-Star game will be this year, but I'm not going. I don't want to go. Or two, you get these guys going, and they just, I mean, as seriously as anyone takes the All-Star weekend, no one tries. These guys, LeBron goes out there for 2 minutes, throws an alley-oop, and then says, all right, I'm done for the night. And it's like, that's the other problem, is these viewers. Going from a viewer's side, I don't think the All-Star Weekend should happen. Going from a viewer's side, if I turn into an All-Star game, it's because I want to watch LeBron James do all this. I want to watch Giannis do this. The last thing I want to do is see these guys make two layups and then sit down and be like, yep, do not put me on the floor for the rest of the night. My shoes are coming off. Like, so it is that thing of this could turn out to be a real bad look for the NBA. One, if they have to try to muscle these players into doing it. But two, if they muscle them in and the players do it and the players just use this as an opportunity to be like, oh, screw you. So, I mean, that's how I feel about it.
I think you hit on something there that if they don't want to do it, you're just adding to the mental fatigue of living through a global pandemic. Yeah. On the best of years, if players are checked out during the All-Star game, what is this going to look like? And you're doing this for the risk that if one of them travels and gets it, all of your best players now have COVID.
Yeah.
Good luck, NBA. You've targeted your moneymakers and taken them out of the equation.
Well, Jay, to your point, imagine that. Imagine LeBron, Giannis, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Jokic, Luka Doncic, all these guys sitting out. Those are some boring freaking basketball games.
Yeah, and we got to remember that they had to recreate the rules of scoring last year just to get people to watch their shit.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So on top of it, they had to change it up, just like, we're flashy, come check us out. Dumb.
Now, see, I think Jay wants this to happen, though, because imagine the betting odds on some of those games, Jay, if there's no Jokic, there's no Luka, there's no LeBron, there's no Carmelo, there's no Dame Lillard. I mean, like, all these games will just be, like, so close because there's no one guy to tip the scales in any which way.
Just wait. I've got a good bet that's in our next topic here that it might tickle your fancy.
Yeah, I want this to happen just because it might mean the Pistons could win the East. If they get a month of no players to just go ball out, Jeremy Grant could average 30 a night and we could get back into this.
Or Jeremy Grant goes to the All-Star game and we lose every other game by 20 points.
So you're saying there's a chance. Long story short, All-Star game doesn't make sense right now. It just really, it's that thing we could do without for a year. Where we're doing out without a lot of other things right now, this is something we can do without. Give these guys a week off. My dad made a great point when I talked to him about this earlier today. Play some old games. Replay some of those like Bill Russell, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson. Replay some of those old games that our parents' generation probably remember, but that we don't remember. It really is like watching the game for the first time. Play some of those. And you want to get kids into the game? Show them the guys that all these guys grew up idolizing and are trying to emulate. Show them what these guys look like that we probably don't see if it isn't for this. And give these guys a week off to recharge the battery, and I can promise you the last couple months of the season are going to be that much better.
And you could even make it an interview series.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, LeBron, what was a game that you watched growing up? that made you fall in love with basketball. And now you have Faith, LeBron, that everyone knows, and now pointing to a previous game that younger viewers would have never seen, and now you have a bridge to that.
Absolutely.
It's great. It's brilliant.
And it just it brings in a whole new, and like you said, Jay, it brings fans to the game. It gives them a new aspect to look at. I like it for that. Speaking of bringing to the game, it is that time. Russ was hoping it wasn't going to happen. He was hoping we were going to run out of time. Just logging in so I have everything ready. It is Pebble Beach Pro-Am Week. Obviously, no amateurs this week. No celebrities playing in this, so it's really just a straight tournament. But decided to have a little fun. We are going to... I'm going to bet on this one. I already knew that. But I'm going to put these guys. I want to see who they're picking, maybe show them some odds, see if one of them's going to throw down a bet slip. I know Jay mentioned he has some bets. So, look, if nothing else, we have to be smart about this. So let's just go right to the degenerate gambler and let him give us his betting. By the way, Jay, this is a radio, so no one can see. Blink twice if you need Russ or I to Venmo you a little bit of money for any reason that we don't know.
Oh.
Do the girls need shoes? Is there anything we're missing here?
I made one clean deposit of $50, and I've quadrupled it.
That a boy.
And it's gone down to $50. So I'm blinking. Give me more money.
but that's why I'm asking. I made one clean deposit of $20, and I got it up to $450. So if you need some tips, I know you're trying the stocks now, too. You're really just doing anything you can to get a coin.
Dude, it's just hobbies, man. I'm very hobby oriented these days. Once you like get past like 5-6-year-old children age, I'm back to me, man. The kids are self sufficient. I don't care what Nora's doing. She's busy. Go do your thing, girl.
By the way, he pointed out like he quadrupled his money, but what you don't realize is he's making it sound like we're on the trend up, and the whole time he's just rapidly blinking to let you know he's in dilemma. I'm okay. Dude. I'm doing fine.
This ain't the gambling. This ain't the gambling segment, but we'll touch that one day. It's rough. And Russ, you got us the higher QBR on Brady, so I owe you money.
Yeah,
it's coming your way, buddy.
All right, so you said you had some bets. I'm curious.
The guy I'm picking to win, there was a bet. It's plus 375. So you put $100 in, you're getting 375 back just to make the top 10 from the weekend.
Okay.
That seems like with a field without Dustin Johnson – this guy making top 10 plus 375, I put $30 on it, I get like $120, $130 back, is Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth, the only club that's bad for him right now is his driver, but he's in luck because Pebble Beach is the shortest track of all PGA courses. It's only 6,800 yards. He doesn't need to have the long ball. He's getting plus 375. I put money on him. I picked Spieth a lot last year when we were picking golfers a lot. He's a younger dude that I liked watching, and I want to watch him win Pebble Beach without DJ in the way and the money. Let's go, Spieth.
Yeah, I'm not touching that bet with a 10-foot pole. Like,
this to finish guy... top, it was in the top 10. That's all he has to do by Sunday is top 10 plus 375.
Well, let's give you, he's tied for fourth right now. He's three back of the lead. So you're sitting pretty. You're sitting pretty. I will say that. Just to throw it out there, just to win, Spieth is plus 800 right now. So you want to throw that usual classic $20 bet on there. Pays out 180 if he wins. Okay, I see what you're doing. I don't mind it. It's not bad. Russ.
I don't mind it.
I don't mind it. Russ, over to you. Let's just say we're about to get a lovely put together, fully analyzed thought process of why Russ is taking who he's taking.
Oh, you couldn't be more wrong. I love it. So Johnson pulled out, so that leaves me looking for another way to get this done. I didn't run the numbers. I didn't do anything because, frankly, I wouldn't. I'm not familiar enough with golf to do anything but lose my own money trying to do so. So I said, what would spell victory? Sponsors AT&T? Give me Matt Jones. M. AT&T. There you go.
My God.
All right, so money, how much can we put on him?
Matt Jones is sitting at plus 5,000.
Yeah, that's a big payoff.
Pays out $1,020. $1,020. So not a bad one.
That's, not good.
No, not good. I'll give you, I don't know where he's, oh, here he is. Tied for 11th. He's tied for 11th, 5 under, so he's 5 back of the lead. Patrick Cantlay is sitting at number 1 right now, 10 under, 2 ahead of everybody else. So it's not a bad bet. I mean, Matt, he very well could do it. I am going to go with a guy who has actually been playing very good golf this year. He's been in contention a lot. He's due for the win. And that's the thing. I'm picking a guy who's behind right now. You guys are both up there. I got a guy that's tied for 22nd, 4 under. So he's got a little bit of ground to make up over the next couple days. We'll see if he can do it. I am going with the great Paul Casey, who is right now at plus 1,600. So pays out 340 on a $20 bet. Paul Casey to win it. It should be interesting. It should be. Jay, we're gonna look at this, and we're gonna see if maybe you need to talk to someone.
Bro,
Jordan Spieth to finish in the top 10. How pissed are you gonna be when he ends up finishing at 11th? Solo 11th.
The same amount of anger I was that Boston didn't cover the puck line last night that went to overtime against the lowly, I think it was Dallas or something. Equally as mad. I do not like losing.
Equally as mad.
I'm taking a lot of L's lately.
Jay, I want to ask, though, something I didn't really bring up. You weren't here last week. Obviously, you had a life and things to do. Little recap on the show. Did we miss anything? Did you not like anything that you weren't too happy with? I tried to be courteous.
I gotta go find my tweet. I did a recap tweet.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's true.
My excused absent tweet. Hang on a second.
With all probably the only tweet I've done with all the emojis you could cram into one Snapchat filter.
It was a lot. It was aggressive. Stafford is going to destroy us next year. I can't wait for that night. Trading up for a QB, I'd do that. If they take a wide receiver, I'm with this. That's like, we're not cute. We don't need that yet. Blinding light. I think Russ had it right. It was Starboy. So Russ had the win right there. He did come out to Starboy. And hammering the under of 56.5. That was sound advice. I didn't even take it. I did over. Yeah. Even though on Twitter I said the under and it would have paid out well. I took the over on my phone.
By the way,
so maybe.
Where'd you guys fall on the halftime show? I personally was not a fan at all. Didn't like it. Didn't think he really. Like I said, when he got into that mirror maze with holding the camera, I got a little nauseous.
Yeah, I got a little car sickness from that. However, I got to give him bonus points because that is the most people at one time that have worn a mask since the pandemic started in Florida at one time. So hey, I give him that.
My king. I love it. I love his music. The actual performance itself is whatever, but Blinding Lights is my number one Spotify song last year. I'm a huge Weeknd fan, so I've got no problem with the music. The performance is underwhelming, but what are you going to do?
All right, and then before we wrap, I'm going to try to stoke this fire one last time to see if I can get it. I'm hoping for a little
60 seconds.
Salt.
I mentioned this in a text to you guys the other day, that the PGA has announced that in the championship this year, you will be allowed to use rangefinder technology. And Jay, you in your text, you got a little salty. There was a little heat there. I'm kind of hoping. Can you sprinkle a little salt on this one for us? And let me know why you're not all about it.
I guess I'm salty at myself.
Okay.
I sometimes learn things later in life than, like, I feel like the normal average human being has learned it already. And, like, I didn't know you couldn't already do something, and now they're fixing about something that I would have really been pissed off about if I had known it in the past versions of me. But now me can't be mad about it because they already fixed it. The game of golf is already fucking hard as it is. I'm still trying to learn that probably at a later age too. It's already difficult that now they're allowing something. Like, it's a device to help you. That's like, I was trying to think of the equivalent. Like, let's take the marsh pegs out of the fucking goal. And, you know, we can't do that. Oh, now let's put a hole in the ground and stick a marsh peg in there so it doesn't break off. Like, no, if you have tools to help you do something, do it. You don't take the carpenter's hammer away and say, go grab a heavy shoe. It was just dumb. And I hate that I didn't know it to hate it even more. So I'm kind of salty. It's a light salt. It's a little table salt. Sesame sea salt.
In the process of that, Jay just created alternate reality Justins. And yeah. Then on top of that, created like other things that I have to ask, are you upset about the marsh peg? Like, do we need to get into that too?
Yeah, that was a little tease.
I feel like that guy is really cool. He created it, and it's named after himself. And it's a little doot-doot. I'm in the ground. I'm in the ice. I'm holding things up. I'll never forget Marsh Peg. Cool name.
Russ, did you feel like you got your daily dose of salt? Because I feel like we could have, if we had pushed a little harder, we might have been able to get a little more on there.
I got my daily dose of something, and now I'm going to go look for Doc Brown to decode what I just heard.
I know. What are these, like, the me's of past and all that? Like
the me's, yeah. Like, days of future past?
Can I ask a question? I haven't been in your basement in a little while. Do you own a cloning chamber and you're just tweaking your DNA till you get the perfect Justin?
Well, Russ, you're going to have to relocate to Albuquerque and we're out of here.
Like at one point, Russ, we're not noticing it because he's always sitting down. At some point, we're going to do one of these shows. He's going to take a week off and we're going to do another one. And we're going to see like a 6'3", fully haired, like Justin Marcus, that's just like he finally got the sequencing right, and it comes out like he went in Steve Urkel and came out Stefan Urkel. Like it's just going to be that much different.
That is a good reference. Yeah, I got nothing. I got to leave it on that reference.
Well, then let's just leave it all together. That's another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. My thanks to the Salt Man, Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus. You got a good bet. I'm excited to see how it pays off.
Little confession station over here. I've never seen Mystery Alaska.
What? Well, okay. Well, just so you know, we'll have a new co-host next week. Justin Marcus has been asked to move to a different part of Armchair Sports Talk, one where he doesn't actually talk. Statman Russ Ivanek, you'll be back next week because you've seen Mystery Alaska. My thanks to you as always, making us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
I love that we're relegated into Armchair Sports Listen.
Yeah. he's got to deal with customer relations. Oh, God. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response, were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought? Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.